You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. All Marine Radio on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are. Hope you're hanging in there. The coronavirus. That thing sucks, man. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not a fan. I want to play the whole 17 minutes of the Secretary of Navy's talk to the crew of the Theodore Roosevelt here in a few minutes. And you'll find it interesting. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to listen, and then I want you to send me an email and tell me what you think. Okay? I'm not going to tell you what I think till at the end of it, after listening to the whole thing. Okay? So it's so he goes to Guam, and the crew's on the ship. And he shows up, and he addresses the crew over what's called the 1MC, right? That is the PA system of the ship that, you know, whoever's going to make an announcement to the ship, you get on the 1MC. So, I want to play that for you. I want to hear what you think about it. Does he say anything that's not true or wrong, and you're from based on what you know? So anyway, you'll hear that. Now, I know this might seem trivial to you, okay, but it's not to me. There was headlines yesterday about professional sports coming back and beginning to play. Now, if somebody could put something to watch on television that would relieve some of the stress, that would be a good thing. So, and I think we're getting to that point where hopefully there's signs that this thing is cresting, which means we can begin to turn our attention to what do we do after this thing? So I saw that the National Hockey League is going to stage some kind of tournament somewhere. And I saw that they were actually looking at my old stomping grounds up in North Dakota. There's a guy who went to the University of North Dakota, comes from a small town in northwest Minnesota called Thief River Falls. His name was Ralph Engelstad. Ralph, he's a backup goalie at the University of North Dakota in their, back when they, in their heyday when they started getting really good. So anyway, Ralph gets out, graduates from college, knocks around for a bit, and he gets into construction in Las Vegas and starts his own construction company. And he does pretty well. He ultimately builds the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And he owns, I want to say, the Imperial Hotel in Las Vegas. And he's owned them forever. And he built the Las Vegas Motor Speedway without union labor. Now, I don't know exactly how that happens, and I guess what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But anyway, as he got into his senior years, he gave the University of North Dakota $105 million to build. Initially, it was $50 million to build a venue for the ice hockey team, and then another $50 million for the school. And then he got mad because the University of North Dakota, their nickname was the Fighting Sioux, and there was always controversy about it in the region, and the uniforms were awesome. They were green, black, and white, and they used the same logo on the front of their jersey as the Chicago Blackhawks do, which is an awesome uniform. And so, anyway, his stipulation was, don't mess with the name. Well, in the midst of the plans and all of this, in the run-up to building the arena, the president of the University of North Dakota came out and said, that he thought the name might be insensitive and blah, blah, blah. So Mr. Engelstad said, you know what? None of that money will go to the university. It'll all be used for the hockey arena. So the hockey arena budget got doubled. And you should see this thing. It's unbelievable. So it's in a town of like 60, 70,000 people, metropolitan statistical area, about 100,000. And you've got one of the nicest hockey facilities in the world. It looks like Nordstrom's, right? Marble, and the facilities down below for the players are the best in the country, without a doubt. They've had, USA hockey's Olympic teams go there. Their junior national team go there. So all kinds of the women's teams have played there. Yeah, it's out in the middle of nowhere. So I read that they were toying with the idea of going, the NHL going to have a tournament. And the key thing is you bring all the teams together, you put them in quarantine, right? You don't allow spectators and you put this thing on TV. And then what happens is the TV revenue offsets your loss at the gate. Anyway, which sports teams, sports leagues are, right, they're dying. The NBA, this is their time of the year. The NHL, this is their time of the year. Packed venues, all the rest of that stuff. So I read an article about that. I also read that Major League Baseball is thinking about doing a similar thing, and that is bringing everybody to Arizona, and they would be sequestered, and you would see them then turn around and play. They need, how many teams in Major League Baseball? 30? 32? Everybody waiting on Governor Cuomo to say where New York is today. As are the numbers continuing to go down? Did they go back up? So that's a big suspense this morning. How many teams in MLB? Answer? 30. Okay, so you need 15 venues if everybody plays on the same day. Okay. So that would be, you have the Diamondback Stadium, then you need 14 fields around that, or 13 plus that if two teams have the day off that only 28 teams play. Okay. And so they have that in Florida. So anyhow, go there. The hotel is sanitized and certain floors are blocked off for players. They eat in the same place. They get on the same buses. All that stuff sanitized on a daily basis. They go to the same facilities. They can't sit in the dugout together. They have to sit in the stands, or they have to, some can sit in the dugout, some have to go other places. So then I read that they also talking about the umpire won't be able to be that close to the catcher, so they're going to use the automatic strike zone that Major League Baseball has been working on. So if that stuff could happen, that would ease a tremendous amount of my pain. Baseball on all day. Are you kidding me? This would actually be tolerable. This would actually be tolerable. But the president in his press conference yesterday was asked if he would get involved in this dust up between the commanding officer of the it's not much of a dust up, but it's created a lot of news. As I watch the news and Jennifer Griffin covers the Pentagon for Fox. She went straight up fake news all the way. To me, the news story is if you listen to the entire 17 minutes that was meant for the crew of the USS Theodore Roosevelt and not for public consumption, and we can talk about whether he should have known that it was going to be recorded or not, then what quarrel do you have with it? If what he said is true, right, he had every right to be pissed. So anyway, I'll play that for you here. And should I open the show now or play that? What do you think? No, I've got to play it. Come on, now that I've talked about it, I mean, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not that guy. So let me tee this thing up. And you'll hear his explanation. All right, you ready? This is the Secretary of Navy aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt after it had pulled into port and after their skipper had been relieved.
I've been wanting to come out to the ship since we first found out you had COVID cases on here. I was actually planning on being here last Tuesday after I went to see the Mercy off in Los Angeles. So I want you to know that no one at my level has been ignoring the situation here from the very beginning. I reached out to your CO through my chief of staff very, very early on in this crisis. On Sunday, I told him that I wanted to come out to the ship and if it would be okay or if it would be too disruptive. I told him that because I wanted to be able to help if there was anything else he needed as this massive effort was underway to get you guys healthy and clean and safe. He waved me off. He said he felt like things were under control. He had been concerned a day or so before that things weren't moving quickly, but he still wanted to get more beds, but he didn't think it was necessary. He also talked to my chief of staff and emailed back and forth with him. On Sunday night, he sent that email. And that email went out to a broad audience of people. I know that I mentioned that it was over 20. We believe it was forwarded to even far more than that. And immediately it was picked up by the San Francisco Chronicle, which published sensitive information about the material condition of a naval warship. If he didn't think, it was my opinion, that if he didn't think that information was going to get out into the public, in this information age that we live in, that he was A, too naive or too stupid to be the commanding officer of a ship like this.
What the fuck?
The alternate is that he did it on purpose. And that's a serious violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which you are all familiar with. That message and all the contents in that message was perfectly fine for him to send to people in his chain of command in a confidential way so they could get acting on it. He, in fact, could have given it directly to me through my chief of staff or to me, as I asked him to do when I first reached out to him on the ship, when we first found out that there were COVID cases here. It was a betrayal of trust with me, with his chain of command, with you, with the 800 to 1,000 people who are your shipmates on shore right now, busting their asses every day to do what they need to do, to convert what they do in a normal day, to get you guys off of here, get you safe, get you healthy, get you clean, and get you back on this ship where you're supposed to be. It was betrayal. And I can tell you one other thing. Because he did that, he put it in the public forum, and it's now become a big controversy in Washington, D.C. and across the country about a martyr CO who wasn't getting the help he needed and therefore had to go through the chain of command, a chain of command which includes the media. And I'm going to tell you something, all of you. There is never a situation where you should consider the media a part of your chain of command. You can jump the chain of command if you want and take the consequences. You could disobey the chain of command and take the consequences. But there is no situation where you go to the media, because the media has an agenda. And the agenda that they have depends on which side of the political aisle they sit. And I'm sorry that's the way the country is now, but it's the truth. And so they use it to divide us. They use it to embarrass the Navy. They use it to embarrass you. While you're out here dealing with something that this country hasn't had to deal with in over 100 years. And the world hasn't ever dealt with anything like this on this scale. The American people believe in you. They think of all the people in the world that can keep their shit together in something like this, it's the United States Navy. And our sailors. And they're stressed. They may be stressed. They may be tired. They may be scared. But they're keeping their shit together. And they're taking care of each other. And they're taking care of their people on the shore who are busting their ass to get them off this ship. They're not taking shots at them. They're asking, how can we help them? What can we do? How can I help the E3 that works for me? I'm an E4. I'm concerned. What do I do to help the E2s and E3s that are on this ship? That's your duty. Not to complain. Everyone's scared about this thing. But I tell you something, if this ship was in combat and there were hypersonic missiles coming at it, you'd be pretty fucking scared too. But you do your jobs. And that's what I expect you to do, and that's what I expect every officer on this ship to do, is to do your jobs. One of the things about his email that bothered me the most was saying that we're not at war. Well, we're not technically at war. But let me tell you something. The only reason we're dealing with this right now is because a big authoritarian regime called China was not forthcoming about what was happening with this virus. And they put the world at risk to protect themselves and to protect their reputations. We don't do that in the Navy. We're transparent with each other in the proper channels and with each other. And that's what we're supposed to do, and that's what you're expected to do. I got your list of questions. I'm very, very thankful to have gotten them. I know they're all sincere. I don't think there's any agenda in any of those, but there's a lot of them. And I'm going to answer every single one of them, but I've got to do it respectfully, and I've got to take some time so you understand all the nuances of the questions that you're asking, and there's a lot of them here. So rather than answer them all today, I'm going to take them back with me to Washington, and I'm going to answer them. And let me say one other thing. Everything I'm telling you guys right now, I will never, ever, ever throw you guys under the bus in Washington or anywhere else, in the media, anywhere else. And I expect you never to do that to your shipmates either. The ones on the shore right now, who told me that when Captain Crozier's email made it to the San Francisco Chronicle, after working 15-hour days, they were demoralized because they knew what they had been doing for you guys since the 25th of March to get you guys what you need. And the other thing you need to understand is we're in Guam. It's a U.S. territory, but they have their own government, and they have their own health care problems, and they're scared too, just like every other part of the world. And the governor of Guam has stuck her neck out big time with her own population to say that she is willing to open up hotel rooms all over this country, or this state, this territory, so that sailors from the USS Teddy Roosevelt can go and be safe, because she believes that you all are her brothers and sisters. Her brothers and sisters who are protecting this place for her citizens. And so she's willing to put all that at risk to take care of you guys. And she told me today, when Captain Crozier's letter came out in the public, she had to then deal with all her constituents who were saying, holy crap, what's happening? We're going to have 5,000 people with COVID in our city without health, proper health care and everything else. So think about that when you cheer the man off the ship who exposed you to that. I understand you love the guy. It's good that you love him, but you're not required to love him. So I want to share something with you that I read at the Naval Academy graduation in 2018. I said it to the graduating class, but I'm going to expand it a little bit. I said, as officers and sailors in the United States military, you are given tremendous responsibility to respect and protect those who are placed under your command. The American people entrust you with their sons and daughters, and they place their security and the security of our nation in your hands. Do not expect to be loved by everyone for this, even though it may happen. As Secretary Mattis, my former boss, was fond of saying to us, who were so honored to work with him in the Pentagon, he said, your job is to protect the nation. So I'm going to give you a little bit of advice to make this important and often difficult job far easier on yourselves. My best advice to you is don't ever worry about being loved for what you do. Rather, love the country that you're asked to defend. Love the Constitution you pledged your lives to protect. And most importantly, love the people you are ordered to lead. Make sure they eat before you do. Care about their families as much as your own. Be vested in their success more than your own accomplishments. Nurture their careers more than you pursue your own advancement. And value their lives to the point that you will always consider their safety in every single decision you make. It's only through this level of servant leadership that you will maximize and empower those you lead to meet the demands that will face us in this century. And those demands are getting more complicated every day as we're all learning. But it's also going to accrue incredible personal satisfaction to you during your time of service. Crew of the Teddy Roosevelt, you are under no obligation to love your leadership, only to respect it. You are under no obligation to like your job, only to do it. You are under no obligation to expect anything from your leaders other than that they will treat you fairly and put the mission of the ship first, because it is the mission of the ship that matters. You all know this, but in my view, your captain lost sight of this, and he compromised critical information about your status intentionally to draw greater attention to your situation. That was my judgment, and I judged that it couldn't be tolerated from the commanding officer of a nuclear aircraft carrier. This put you at great risk, even though I am certain he never thought it would. I'm certain he loved you all, as he should, but he lost sight of why the TR exists and why fate brought you all here together in the middle of this COVID crisis. Your nation back home is struggling. No one expected this pandemic, and so we are all working our way through it. Your fellow sailors in the States are volunteering, putting on uniforms, and running into the fire in places like New York, Los Angeles, Dallas, and New Orleans. I've seen them, no fear, running right into COVID. Nothing is easy in this for anyone, but from the very beginning, we have been engaged from my level down to bring you the help you need as fast as we possibly could. Understand, it takes time to flex up for a crisis this unique, but the TR has to stand strong as warriors, not weak like victims. The TR has to work its way through this with grace, not panic. The TR has to demonstrate to the citizens back home that it has its act together and that it is knocking down this virus, just like it would knock down the Chinese or the North Koreans or the Russians if any one of those nations were ever so stupid enough to mess with the big stick because they thought she was vulnerable. I cannot control or attempt to change whatever anger you have with me for relieving your beloved CO. If I could offer you a glimpse of the level of hatred and pure evil that has been thrown my way, my family's way, over this decision, I would, but it doesn't matter. It's not about me. The former Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, suggested just yesterday that my decision was criminal. I assure you it was not, because I understand the facts, and those facts show that what your captain did was very, very wrong in a moment when we expected him to be the calming force on a turbulent sea. There was very little upside in this decision for me. You can believe that or not. I made the decision for the Navy I love, for the Navy I served in and now serve for, and mostly for the sailors I am responsible for, not just here, but on nearly 300 other ships in the fleet. Your captain's actions had implications for them too. Imagine if every other CEO also believed that the media was a proper channel to air grievances with their chain of command under difficult circumstances. We would no longer have a Navy, and not longer after that, we'd no longer have a country. Still, I understand you may be angry with me for the rest of your lives. I guarantee you won't be alone. But being angry is not your duty. Your duty is to each other, and to this ship, and to the nation that built it for you to protect them. Even amidst an unexpected crisis, it is the mission of this ship that matters. Our adversaries are watching, and that is why you are here. We will get you the help you need. You have my personal word on it. Your CEO had my personal word on that from day one. Whatever else you may think of me, I don't go back on my word. And when it comes to the TR, whether you hate me or not, I will never, ever, ever give up the ship. And neither should you. Thanks for listening, and I'll get the detailed answers to your questions.
All right. There you have it. In its entirety, his comments to the crew. Now, let me just, first of all, there's nothing he said in there, right? If that's what happened, if he's in direct communication with the commanding officer of that ship and that's what happened, he has every right to be pissed. Every right to be pissed and every right to relieve him. Okay. Now, the next question. So, to me, here's the question. Okay. One, why is the Secretary of the Navy dealing with the USS Roosevelt? The USS Roosevelt, if you look at a picture of the fleets, right, there's a map I found. Okay, so what fleets are where? Off the coast of California is the 3rd Fleet. Now, the 7th Fleet picks up someplace west of Hawaii. I'm not exactly sure if where Guam is in this thing. I should probably find out. So the Roosevelt's either part of the 3rd Fleet or the 7th Fleet at this time. So you've got this commanding the flag officer that owns the 3rd or 7th Fleet. Then you got the U.S. Navy's Pacific Command. So I would tend to say that you have the battle group that the Roosevelt's a part of. That's a 1-star command. the fleet command is a two-star command. The Pacific, right, like MAR Forces PAC, that's a three-star. So Naval Forces Pacific, that's a three-star. You have that guy. So that's one, two, three. And I don't know who between that guy and then, well, there's the CNO, and then there's four, and then the Secretary of the Navy. Why is he calling the commanding officer of that ship? I don't understand that. Right? Now, there's a lesson in all this for everybody out there. Okay? Before I get to the emails that I've gotten. Okay? Don't go anywhere near a microphone when you're pissed off. And clearly, Modley was pissed off. And from the sounds of it, what he laid out, he had every reason to be pissed off. However, comma, when you're a person of that stature, assume that every word that you say is going to be recorded or somehow covered. Now, he could say, look, everything I said was true. And you'd say, okay, but clearly inappropriate for your stature as the commanding, as the right responsible civilian acting for the United States Navy. So, Modley, he was pissed. Now, I saw people go on, right, and he used profanity. And get out of here with that shit, okay? It's a life and death business. Okay. But what he does in public, right, he could have laid out the case for why he did what he did so the crew would understand that. He could have laid out the case of what either the 7th Fleet or the 3rd Fleet was doing to support, right, in conjunction with your battle group, in conjunction with the 7th Fleet and the Pacific Command, these are all the things that were moving. And then all of a sudden this thing hits the media. Right? And he and Mondi even rightly says, you could be insubordinate within the chain of command. You cannot be insubordinate and expect to survive outside the chain of command and if you go public. Nobody can save you from that. All right. So let me read you some email. Number one. So this is what we have our panties in a bunch about? Honestly? Have we become that much of a wussified nation? I was expecting way worse. I don't know why. Now, I imagine the teetotalers among us will be absolutely aghast. But if what the Secretary of Navy laid out is in fact what's true, then he's absolutely correct. Much ado about nothing, in my humble opinion. Okay, here's another one. Mac, great discussion on Captain Crozier. SecNav probably made it worse by not keeping his emotions in the box and not recognizing that his address to the ship would be released and scrutinized publicly. A PAO's worst nightmare was not wargaming it and ensuring it was going to get the proper effect, in my opinion. I'm teaching someplace in the country today. I don't want to give out anybody's name. A course on leadership and ethics. We'll talk about it. How things ought to work if you don't agree with your boss or policy, etc. I don't think Captain Crozier did things correctly. And I do think most military guys would say, yeah, he screwed up. Here's another one. Every person I've spoken to believes that he acted like a punk and got what he deserved. The truth will come out and shed more light about the details. Here's another one. Speech is BS. Too much academy, rah, 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 and zero Mattis type leadership. Interesting. He quotes Mattis in his little speech there. Here's another one. I am speechless at the unprofessional and stupidity of this address to the crew. This fuck needs to be gone today. So that's somebody. Here's another one. A complete 180 of what was shown and propagated. Will the media play this response? Nope. Yeah, let's talk about two issues. One is the issue of the facts as he lays them out, right? I mean, if those are the facts and you say that to the Secretary of the Navy and then you blindside him with that email, I mean, you could quarrel with the choice of words, too naive or too stupid, but they seem to apply. If you're having conversations with those kind of people and you blindside them or you didn't tell them the truth or somehow or other and you got confused and then you didn't go back to them for clarification, hey, I just want to be sure. Come on, man. Yeah, that is literally, come on, man. What are you, crazy? Are you out of your mind? You have death wish? All right, and the second issue is his delivery, right? You pretty much sit down and write that out. You don't speak off the cuff, and you don't say the things that he said. I mean, that's like, unless you want to be gone too. So, but yesterday the president said that he was going to look into it. He said, look, in his press conference, if you didn't see it. He said, look, you can't do what he did. I'll paraphrase. You can't do what he did. But I've heard great things about him, the captain of the ship. He said, look, you don't get to that position and not be, you know, a water walker. My words, not his. And he said, and so he had a pretty bad day. You can hear the president. Bad day. Pretty bad day. He said, but, and people say the same thing as of the acting secretary of the Navy. He said, so you had a couple of bad days. He said, so I'm going to look into it. You know, sometimes, you know, there's no reason somebody's entire career should be destroyed because they had a bad. And then the president said, because he had a bad day. He said, really, he had a bad week. So, but again, to me, the questions are, so you're having a conversation about, you know, all of a sudden you're blindsided by this letter. When we thought, according to what he said, everything's tracking. Seventh Fleet's tracking, you know, Pacific Command's tracking, SecNav's tracking, right? And then kaboosh, this thing goes. Right? You could see the mushroom cloud on the horizon. That's it. That's this. And it's coming our direction. So then the next little roundtable we have is, okay, he's done. Who's going to relieve him? Well, to me, it should be the guy who is his first flag officer in the chain of command, which should have been, you know, whatever battle group he's a part of. Now, I don't know if that's like appropriate. Is that appropriate? Can that guy do that? If it's not, 7th Fleet can. 3rd Fleet can, whoever, whatever fleet the dude's a part of. But to me, some admirals should relieve them. So we're sitting around the table and like, all right, we got it. This is not good. What he did is wrong. We all got that. Right? So who relieves him? And Motley said, look, I, you know, and even if it's the CNO, but this is not a CNO level thing. This is a fleet thing. If he was insubordinate. So essentially what, you know, 7th Fleet's trying to help him and he calls bullshit on him and he goes to the media. So to me, 7th Fleet relieves him like that. Or the battle group CEO relieves him like that. Why the Secretary of the Navy did it, I don't understand. So you got some situations here. But when you listen to Motley, right, if it's just us on the ship and this happens 30 years ago and he comes out, I mean, he's a little overheated, but I got it. I was wrong. I mean, unprofessional delivery, yes, but in terms of what he said, if those are the facts, he has every right to be absolutely furious. Because, again, I said this yesterday, I'll say it again. There's people, intel people, in the United States military that are watching every move the Chinese make right now. Saying, look, the worst, the most dangerous course of action for the United States is some kind of event with the Chinese. And might they use this, right, as the impetus for that event? Well, guess what? So we're watching. Our satellites are watching all movements of the Chinese military. Would they seize Singapore? Right. Don't think they have the ass to seize anything else, Taiwan or something like that. But there's people watching that stuff. So when he says, yeah, the Roosevelt's out of business, I mean, you can't, right? Everybody knows you can't do that. I mean, honestly, it's reckless. And so, in my opinion, Motley had every right to be pissed. Okay, but you can't deliver it the way he delivered it. You're not that guy anymore. All right? So, anyhow, I thought I'd play the whole thing for you, because when you play the whole thing, it sounds different. It sounds different. And he's since apologized. I think I saw in the 7th Fleet, hold on, their website, 7th Fleet, U.S. Navy. Let me see if they have the SecNav's apology. 7th Fleet commander arrives at Guam during COVID-19 recovery. No, it wasn't. U.S. Hold on. Navy Pacific Command. Let's see. SecNav statement on Theodore Roosevelt CO relief. This is a few days ago. This was not his apology from yesterday. I want to make that a part of the official record of this trial. Acting Secretary of Navy apologized for calling ousted aircraft carrier captain stupid. Let's see. In a reversal from a statement earlier in the day, Acting Secretary of Navy Thomas Motley apologized for criticizing Captain Brett Crozier, the former commanding officer of the U.S. Theodore Roosevelt, in remarks, quote, I want to apologize to the Navy for my recent comments to the crew of the TR. And this was a statement they made last night. Now, you can imagine who's involved in this statement, okay? Motley decided to relieve Crozier, blah, 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 blah. Quote, the spoken words were from the heart. I stand by every word I said, even regrettably any profanity that I may have used for emphasis. Anyone who has served on a Navy ship would understand. All right. So then that was Monday. Monday night, he augmented the apology. Let me be clear. I do not think Captain Brett Crozier is naive or stupid. I think and always believed him to be the opposite. We pick our carrier commanding officers with great care. Captain Crozier is smart and passionate. I believe precisely because he is not naive and stupid that he sent his alarming email with the intention of getting it into the public domain in an effort to draw public attention to the situation on his ship. I apologize for any confusion this choice of words may have caused. I also want to apologize directly to Captain Crozier, his family, and the entire crew of the Theodore Roosevelt for any pain my remarks have caused. They and the entire Navy have my full commitment that I will continue to help get the TR back to full health, back to sea, where we can move forward beyond this unfortunate situation. Anyway, let me read you a couple more. Were we in another day and age, nobody would have found out about it. Nobody would have said anything. And if you're a member of that crew on that ship, I think you would have had an interesting discussion. And by and large, that discussion would have gone on for a number of days and weeks as information came out, as more and more people had their say. Guys who were working on the medical side of it, guys who were working on the logistics side of it, they would come back and they would tell you the truth. And you would slowly but surely form your opinion. And we would find out which one is true. A little bit of frank talk has caused a lot of controversy. Pretty interesting to watch, Mac. Thank you for playing the entire 17 minutes. Here's one more. Maudley should be gone in short order. I heard you muse yesterday, will this hasten the appointment of his successor? I would hope so. His unprofessional conduct is another stain on the Navy that is struggling to get it right across the board. This certainly looks horrific. And your questions are spot on, Mac. Where are the four admirals, to include the CNO, that should have stepped into the discussion and said, his relief is our business. You shouldn't be involved in that. The Navy seems to struggle with leadership mightily these days. God bless them. Good luck to them. I hope they can get unscrewed. You know what? That's probably pretty true. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Here's one more email. I think General Keane summed it up summed it all up pretty well. The skipper made a mistake, and it may have risen to the level of being relieved. I would quarrel with the may have, right? It absolutely did. Public insubordination, no military suffers that. Anyway, the email goes on. However, the SECNAV has made this situation much worse and embarrassing. With the dressing down of the crew to stroke his ego and justify his actions. Now Trump smells an opportunity and will probably make it worse. He said probably wade into it. And I would add, make it worse. Certainly, he will do that. you can count on that. But to me, I didn't think the crew got dressed down. Right? Maybe you did. I didn't think. You know, I think he, but, you know, without a doubt, dude was pissed. Yeah, don't do radio when you're pissed. Although radio tends to get better when you're pissed. At least that's what the consultants will tell you. This is dedicated to the United States Navy. Where the hell were the admirals throughout all of this? And look, in their absence, look what happened. Right? So I'm not sure if this is Modley's power trip, that when they sat around the table with the CNO, and the CNO said, hey, this relief ought to be action by us. And Modley says, no, I've got it. Then I think we got to go into small group. Modley might have to call the SecDef. Hey, Modley's going to hurt us, and I need your help. I need somebody's help. Yeah, and then the SecDef could call him. Hey, Tom, what's going on? Hey, nothing, Mark. What's call me Mr. Esper. Nothing, Mr. Esper. How you doing? Nothing. Just called to see. I'm reading this Theodore Roosevelt stuff. Everything okay? Yeah, I'm going to relieve him. Okay, don't do that. Hand that one to the CNO. Well, I thought, okay, I know what you think. You're the acting dude, though. Not a whole lot of experience. Certainly at this end of the pool, do what the CNO wants. Got it? Yes, sir. All right, see ya. Done. And the flag officers of the Navy probably know how to steward this a little bit better than Modley did. But where the hell were they? So, this is dedicated to the United States Navy. Good luck.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Here's another email. Holy shit, that was awesome. You know, there used to be a day and age when you could have knockdown dragouts. That day is come and gone. Our world is so PC now. I was curious when you said you were going to play all 17 minutes of it. Based on what I've seen in the news, I expected something far, far worse than that. Of the dressing downs that I was a part of in the Navy and the Marine Corps, that isn't in the top 50, for God's sakes. We have truly become a nation of wussies. God help us. All right. Currently sunny and 71 in Quantico. It is mostly sunny, 74 down the coast at Camp Lejeune. So spring has sprung on the East Coast. Cloudy in 53 in 29 Palms. Raining in 55 at Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 66. Okinawa is dark cloudy in 62. Early in the evening in Lashkar Gah in Afghanistan, it is cloudy in 69. And late in the late afternoon in Iraq, it is cloudy in 74 degrees. Currently, Southern California is in a flash flood watch until 7 p.m. Yeah, 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 8th. Currently, it is 56 and cloudy. The wind chill sits at 56. Yep. Looking for a high of 64 with rain today. 70% chance. That means it's going to rain today. On Wednesday, looking for a high of 61 with a 40% chance of rain. That means it won't rain. And then on Thursday, God almighty, are you kidding me? Rain again and 60 degrees. So that is a look at your weather. Now, I've got time. Don Shields is going to join us. We're going to talk about public health. I'm curious to what he sees that catches his eye as we're kind of sort of, it would seem to be entering a different phase of this pandemic, if I can use that word, right? And that is, how do we come out of it? Who goes to work first? Do we have the quick tests so that people can administer when somebody's coughing a lot at work to know that, yeah, this is just, you know, a respiratory illness and you're going home, but you don't have COVID-19 and you didn't expose the rest of us. So anyway, tell, what is the plan? Does somebody develop? It's kind of like your home pregnancy test, right? Do those things work? What is the reliability of a home pregnancy test? Let me do a little search, because that's what we're talking about, reliability. Reliability of the home pregnancy test. Both tests for presence of the pregnancy hormone, HGC, the difference is that one test uses a strip or dipstick that you hold in the urine stream, and the other uses a urine collection cup with a test device. Home pregnancy tests, 99% accurate. What? Come on, nothing's that accurate. According to the United States Office of Women's Health, home pregnancy tests, what's this? It says can be 99% accurate when used correctly. The amount of HGC present in a woman's urine increases with time, and an accurate result is usually obtained if the test is taken after a missed period. you know, things that we talk about that you never think you would talk about. All right, let me go ahead and do top five stories in Early Bird. We'll take a break, and then Don Shields is going to join us. We're going to talk to him about what he finds interesting. Top story in Stars and Stripes today is acting Navy Secretary apologizes for calling the CEO of the Roosevelt stupid. Another significant story, the Taliban says it's walking away from talks with the Afghan government over the prisoner release. So how long will this go on? How long will this go on? AFRICOM announced that they have killed the senior terrorist leader in Somalia as airstrikes intensify. Now, I don't know if you pay attention to military operations around the world, but that headline there doesn't mean shit. We've been whacking senior leaders for the last 20 years, and we are no closer to a positive outcome. So I wish they'd just shut up about that shit. You know, and it's these, in my opinion, these air power people, right, that have been saying that we can do this from the sky since World War II. Right? We don't need ground forces, and we don't need a lot of them. And then you had Donnie Rumsfeld show up. We can do it from the sky. We'll have special operations guys zooming around. Blah, 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 blah. Didn't work. The dumb guys didn't get the memo. Right? There's a really interesting article that was written in 1996 entitled this, How We Lost the High-Tech War of 2007. A Warning from the Future. It's written by an Air Force officer by the name of Charles Dunlap, published in 96. And you should hear how accurately he predicts what happens in Iraq and Afghanistan. That we thought our information operations and our technology, they would cower from that. And he writes it from the perspective of the conquering nation. They did not realize that we were more than willing to die for the great one. Right? So he doesn't go like straight up like Muslim on you. He says the great one. But he talks about all the different things in this war that happened. That, you know, that Americans, when they joined in close combat with us, they were not prepared for us to capture their women who form significant parts of their units, rape them, amputate their arms, and then give them back to them in that condition, screaming. They did not expect that we would conduct biological warfare within the United States against their food supply. And it goes on and on and on. And you're like, holy shit, man. Written in 1996. Anyway, top five stories in Early Bird. Then we'll take a break. And we'll talk some public health. All right, number one. Early Bird has not been updated. Is that their cuts? So let me give you the top stories in Marine Corps Times. The basic school struggles to weather COVID-19 as outbreak hits officer training school. Number two, keep it conservative as services break out face mask rules. Come on, you know they're going to show up with every stupid form of face mask and walk around with it. Right? Till somebody says, what are you doing? What are you doing? Another headline. Trump stepping in as dispute intensifies over aircraft carrier captain's dismissal. So those are headlines. We'll take a break. Don Shields joins us next. We'll talk a little bit of public health with a retired public health guy who I met while I was an elected official in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And we'll talk about what we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks since we last talked to Don. And we'll get his thoughts on what he finds interesting about this 100-year event. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hold on. What I am going to play for you next, I actually recorded at the end of the show introducing Hour 1. But I think it's important to have in the actual recording of hour one. And it's my thoughts relative to, I'm more comfortable with people fighting and wire brushing people than I am with the yes man, non-dissent bullshit that broadened the war in Afghanistan and that got us into the war in Iraq. And so if I could tell you, if I had a preference, and that's what you're going to hear in a second. If I had a preference, give it to me ruder, harder every time. And we can fight about it. The greater threat to our democracy are smooth guys in silk suits, smooth guys in whatever kind of suits. I mean, the bobbleheading general officers and flag officers who allow them to take the nation and the Department of Defense and a lot of innocent lives with them on the stupid things they conceive of. So with that said, this is the last couple minutes of hour two from today. Have a great day. That'll do it. Yeah, that's it today. That's the show. Talking public health here on a Tuesday. If you, excuse me, if you're just tuning in hour one, we talk about the relief of the captain of the USS Theodore Roosevelt. And actually what I did was I played the entire 17-minute speech that he gives. And you're going to hear some emails that come in on the back end of that. And I think you'll find it pretty interesting. Yeah, it's the somebody hit record on their cell phone when he started speaking on the USS Theodore Roosevelt. And I will say this. I watched the coverage yesterday, and people cherry-picked out of that whole 17 minutes. They tended to cherry-pick the too naive or too stupid to be in command of the USS Theodore Roosevelt. Everybody extracted that one. And then there was one other one. I can't remember it off the top of my head. And so then they made their comments. When you listen to the whole 17 minutes, as unprofessional as it is in spots, you could tell a couple things. One, he's pissed. Two, that he personally, the Secretary of the Navy, which again brings up a whole series of questions, but he personally was in contact with Captain Crozier. Captain Crozier told him personally that he was satisfied with what was going on, and then this letter shows up. So there's a lesson in there. When you're pissed, don't go talk to the media. Don't go talk to the crew of a ship. And assume that everything you say is going to be, you know, is going to be, you'll answer for at some point. That's always a pretty good assumption. Now, I got an email that said, you know, it wasn't, you know, would love to hear what General Mattis said. Well, I mean, General Mattis has been put out in timeout corner for saying other indelicate things, right? You know, and the fact that General Mattis got to where he was, a little bit of a miracle. You know, what was his comments about killing people's fun as a general officer? Now, I don't think you could really understand that until your day-to-day job is to help kill people and help save people. I don't think it makes any sense to anybody until that's your job. But he survived that. Yeah, stayed on active duty as a general officer. And he survived a couple other indelicate things. A lot of people don't. So, again, and you know what? I think that's part of what's wrong with the DOD and why we don't stand up when there's a big crisis, when there's a big decision, because we take people that are strong-willed and sometimes fiery, and we say, yeah, that he's not what we need. We need, you know, Mr. Milk Toast over there. Very cool head. Doesn't say anything. He doesn't fight, though. And I'm more comfortable with Maudley right? And airing it out and being pissed. And then him come back and saying, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Right? I mean, we could have put Patton in mothballs. But who rescued the guys at Bastogne? Who was the first person to their aid? George Patton. Right? And his Third Army. Right? Going through distances and through terrain and weather that people said, yeah, they're not going to be able to get through for another X number of days. Oh, no, they got there. So, to me, all the hand-wringing and, oh, the wrong tone and, oh, he bitched them out and, oh, it was unprofessional. I think we need a little bit more of that. We have too many professionals. We have too many suited, soft-spoken jackasses that have got us into places like Vietnam and places like Iraq and expanded the ground war in Afghanistan, right? All done by real smooth-talking, people. And then you had other people in military uniforms who rubber-stamped that shit because they wouldn't fight them. They wouldn't take them on in public. And that's their moral obligation. So if on this bell curve, I would tell you this. I'm way more comfortable with the brawling and airing it out in public than I am with this slick, cowardly road that we've gone down to, in both Iraq and Afghanistan. To the nation and the region's detriment. So, that's what I think. So, have a fine afternoon. We will see you tomorrow morning here at the same time, 08 Pacific time, for a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.